Bruce Davidson. He just completed a project with his students in making a visual vote for Lindsay.
Uh-huh.
They translated why they voted for him with a camera to be stuck in under his nose to see if he's accomplished this.
Well, what nice that happened as a result. What did they turn up with?
It's about to happen in the second stage now. There's such fascinating overlaps between sound, politics, and all the things we're talking about. And everybody in New York has a little hand, not often. Tony's got two hands on one. There's nobody like
you. Know the kid's joke about what do you see when you lift up an elephant's tail? The engine. Trunk's up front. Yeah, I'd rely on the kids for most of my jokes.
You know, I would love to do a movie where I take the character of words that people say. For instance, I use the word a lot. You know, I say
very expressive.
Now, people, I'm doing a tape for Lindsay. He does this in his public appearances, and it cuts down his effect tremendously. So I'm doing a tape taking his speeches and showing him if he just were to cut out his us. First, I'm going to give him all his us first. Then show him that if he cut out his us, how his image changes just by doing this. And I have some Seymour Siegel's giving.
You see what would happen if he said instead of This would make him a very sharp guy. A guy who's always making discoveries.
He'd be like a psychiatrist.
Now, you see, the moment is the moment of eureka. I got it. That's all you have to tell him. Just stop this stuff and say, Boy, got it made.
Barry Brown, I think. It wasn't you, I'm sure, said that the word that's, or the phrase that's interesting, is a cop-out. It leaves you without saying anything and getting out of it.
Oh, yes, this is what you say to a person. What do you think of this painting?
What you say? Very interesting. Next question. Very interesting. Next question,
please. I heard another one, yes. I made a tape for someone. He played it to an actor, and he was very much interested in his reaction of his acting, this guy's acting. Another fellow says, very sensitive. Now, that's another one.
Another one is to go whistle, low whistle. Much better than any verbalizer. There you go. But
no, but you see, there are people, I have recordings of people where I'll record an hour of them, and through it there are 50 or 100. So he says to me, he says, so I says to him, I says. Or another one will say...
See what I mean?
And it wasn't either one of them.
And I want to take out those lines and do a film with these words becoming the characters. So one guy is Mr. You see what I mean? You know, and he goes through life just saying, you see what I mean? You see what I mean? Another, you get children who say, well.
That sounds like Marvin. Have you heard this new song that we heard in the cab today about Marvin?
On this.
No, oh, you will hear it. You will hear it. There's a new song, this great big hit overnight, all about Marvin.
Who's that pudgy fella? I didn't give him credit. Didn't credit him with this. What's his name? The
Alan Sherman.
Alan Sherman. Yeah. It sounds like one of his.
By the way, you know the film Never to Return, Canadian Film Board Dropout.
No.
Well, in it they have one sequence where a student raises a gun to kill his teacher. And a classroom bell goes off. And I was wondering if that's what you were referring to.
As an effect of what kind?
The bell business before.
Oh, well, no, the bell that the community bell, the tolling bell, has a tremendous inclusive sound. No, the alarm bell doesn't include nobody. That means beat it. And the classroom bell means get up. you see, it's high pitch. The community bell has to be a low on.
Did I tell you I'm taking a class in oral perception next year, and I'm taking all dropouts? I believe that they're essentially dropouts.
And I heard a little speech yesterday at a conference by Alan Lloyd of McGraw-Hill, and he was showing the effects of using typewriters instructing with typewriters in classrooms. And he said,
typographical error,
isn't it? He said, the poorer the student, the more they improve, the more they gain from this. And that is only another way of saying that the poorer students are really people who use all their senses. And the better students are people who have succeeded in specializing in visual life, just pulling the eye out from the other senses. That's the top student in our world. Doesn't mean that he's brainy, it just means that he's specialist in his sensory life. Now, this happens in Toronto. There's a conundrum connected with the observed fact that the slow grades 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 are the ones who learn to speak French quickly. The fast grades, the top people, never learn to speak it. You can't learn to speak a language by eye. So it's these dumbbells who use all their senses who learn French. They can get at it with all their senses. You see, you know, you learn a language mainly by ear and by rhythm. I have a French friend who says there are no words in French, there are only rhythms. It makes it difficult for an English person to hear French. No words. Just rhythm. But the linguist says this is true of all languages, that basically they are rhythms and not words.
How many languages do you speak?
I could make out a little bit of French, that's about all. How about you?
Well, some hillbilly Russian and English.
Well, I can talk a lot of dialects. I have no trouble with dialects. It's just that I've never studied languages. I'm a monolingual guy. Well, I've always had a great facility with picking up the local dialect in Ireland or Texas or Devonshire or anywhere. Well, you know, it's easier to do it when you're sort of in the environment. But you know, you need to get the rhythm feeling. It gets going, you know. But after all, I have a Texas wife, and it isn't too hard for me to do Texas. But she, in turn, does many other dialects, you know, except she prefers the Alabama or the Georgian or Mississippi or anything to Texas. But and notice the new TV generation kids, they love putting on dialects. They love to mimic dialects. I don't remember kids doing that in my time. Now, I think you'll find that empathy, TV is an empathic. Well, that just as radio was added to silent pictures as soundtrack, so TV has tended to retain the movie soundtrack, which is a radio form, in spite of the fact that the images for which the sound is provided have nothing in common. So I haven't tried to imagine myself what should be the soundtrack for TV. It would certainly not be a hi-fi sound like radio or gramophone. It might well be more in the electronic music vein. It might. I don't know. There's no reason why you can't have different sorts of soundtracks. But it hasn't occurred to anybody to work out a soundtrack for TV that would be completely different from the movie one. It's somewhat like this, though, that just as the movie used as its content the old medium, every new medium uses as its content the old one, and the movie used the novel as storyline, and TV went on using the movie storyline, despite the fact it is not a narrative medium.
The one difference that I see possible is the fact that you can take, I find the greater tendency and the more success just comes from using sound and counterpoint to image rather than using
matching.
You see, that's one area.
Because counterpoint is making, not magic. You make, and when you make something, this involves the participant or the viewer very much more than just matching. Matching, though, is a normal activity for the visual world. it is not a natural activity for the auditory or the other senses.
Could you give me the line, just in simple English, that the medium is the message?
The medium is the message is another perfect example of any medium using the old medium as content. The medium creates an environment that is a sort of infallible teaching machine that works on the sensory life of the population. And so if you substitute for message, massage, you get the idea that what the medium does is to make a new environment that really works into the whole innards of people and massages them. It's a process. The medium is a process. The content is not. It's the old medium that had already done the massaging long ago. Now, the new medium is a new massage treatment, and the content is always the old medium, as with silence or whatnot on TV.
You say it always is?
Always, yes. I don't know of any exceptions. See, when Plato began to write down words for the first time, he wrote down the old oral tradition. He wrote down the words of Socrates, who belonged to the previous culture. And this goes right on through. The first 200 years of printing did nothing but print medieval literature.
Right, but then what about the after that?
The same. You see, it's like the horseless carriage. It's the old buggy dolled up, put the horse in the cart, and away we go. I was thinking just today about the a phrase for the safety car is rocking the bandwagon, because what the safety car amounts to is putting the public in the carriage, and by the time the public now insists on being included in the carriage in order to feel safe, and this in effect rocks the bandwagon all to bits. It's the end of the car. The safety car equals end of car. The dead. Oh, well. It would be nice if nothing would take its place for a while. But chances are we're going to have three-dimensional transportation. After all, we live in the age of the rocket, the jet, the airplane. Why we haven't had three-dimensional transportation at all levels long ago, I don't know, but vertical. You know, after all, the horizontal transportation is now ancient history. And the new speeds of the society are all adjusting to non-horizontal. You know the discomfort that people feel in going to and from airports. There's something wrong. Everybody feels this shouldn't happen. I'm only going to fly for an hour once I get off the ground, and here it takes me over an hour to get out there. Something wrong. But, Anyway, any medium creates an environment. The environment is a process that just twists the guts of people. That's the message.
The essence of folklore, and write folk songs about their life, they go to other musics. They go to mountain music. They go to...
No, that's partly rearview mirror. It's easier to see things at a distance in another culture. If you ask a kid, a freshman in a school, to write an autobiography of themselves, it's impossible. They have no image of themselves at all. They can give a few statistics, and they always say, I'm just an ordinary kid. I went to high school, and now here I am in college, and that's it. That's all they can see of themselves. But they could see their neighbors. They could see other people much more clearly. Autobiography is very difficult because the image we form of ourselves is invisible, except to others. You see, from moment to moment, we make an image based on what we hear and feel and see. We make a body image of ourselves all the time. From every waking moment, we have a body image. It's changing. It's invisible. You can't see it. It's total environment. It is so total that it's invisible. All environments, though, are invisible.
Esquire conducted an experiment in one December issue where they asked famous people to do a sketch of themselves and answer seven questions at any length. And it was very revealing. Whatever anyone did, Fred Astaire did the longest one, and very revealing about himself. But if you can tie it down to specific questions, I think you can hit at this rather than letting them loose.
There you go. You better turn that back on. It's getting real warm in here. I'm very grateful for the voice in having it all. One of the things I was in Washington recently, I find that everywhere you go is air conditioning. It's terribly hard on the voice, terribly hard on allergies, which I seem to experience. Yeah, it was good to get out of there. Well, I'll look at the bag when it comes and think about it. But I don't exhaust areas that I study. I just sample. I look for contours, structures. I don't fill them in.
I'm with you. This is exactly what we need.
Well, what would be interesting to know, what are some of the key changes in photography that have occurred in, say, the last 10 years?
You have to see it and really try it. Have you ever shot a Polaroid picture?
No, I've seen friends do it all the time.
Have you ever made a videotape?
I have, actually.
Have you ever seen yourself on 21 screens at
no,
the same time?
No, heaven forbid.
No, I think that
after
if
all,
get a happening at a videotape,
even Hercules,
you
know,
a short time.
Even Hercules only had to clean the Augean stables once. 21 times. Boy, what a thing to wipe off. But, you know, by the way, this is inherent in TV more than in movie, multiple screens, is because when you have multiple screens, you don't have a storyline. The movie favors storyline much more than TV. TV doesn't need storyline. It's more iconic. It can deal with the separate, unconnected screens much better than...
Now you're referring to Eames, IBM, right?
No, I'm not referring to anything. Just structure. That the nature of TV favors multiple screens. It is being held to the one screen by movie form. Rearview mirror. What's this one about? I think, where am I going? What's this one about?
This is about the Electronic Museum.
Huh?
Read a little of that. This is Alan Schwanger's.
One of the things... Oh, well. Can't talk about it. No, it's just about two. The Electronic Museum made by whom?
Well, no, this is his idea of what the computer can do to museums.
Yep. Oh, I know. I've been thinking about it.
By the way, we're sending the first Marshall McLuhan care package to Europe.
What's that mean?
Gutenberg Galaxy, Messages Medium, and four-year speeches to several photographers who just aren't with it and are kind of stuck.
Well,
and I'm anxious to use your word to hear what the feedback is going to be.
Well, spare me. I can imagine. The son of a gun, Jerry Stern, is printing a whole batch of violently hostile book reviews of Gutenberg Galaxy and Understanding Media in a book.
Great.
And he's making comments, and I'm making comments on each of the reviews as we go. In other words, we're using these as a means of revealing all sorts of things.
If I were you, I would show up in the Village Voice office some afternoon.
I never read that. I heard about it.
Why don't you just show up there and ask him for the copies? You upset that whole damn place. It just is.
But
do that as dessert something.
Okay, I'll do that. Would I need a bodyguard?
No, they'll love
no. You. The guy who wrote that, I assume, was the sort of guy who, one afternoon at NYU when I was on a panel, it was the afternoon I got soaking wet and had to go onto the platform in the evening with my wet, these clothes soaking wet. I couldn't, Saturday afternoon you can't get any pressing done in New York. Literally. I mean, that's not a figure of speech. I spent $4.50 in a cab going around every pressing establishment in New York City. And valet services at Grand Central everywhere, no hope. But this little guy in between these miseries that I went through that day, he kept barging in, trying to get something from me. And I said, well, look, I've got to be speaking tonight. And have you read my books? He says, no. Well, I'll be saying a lot of things that are in the books tonight on this speech and so on. Why don't you let that go for an interview? Oh, I guess it made him real mad. But anyway, he was a real nuisance. Boy, he was a nuisance all that afternoon. And because I was in public, there was no privacy. And so I guess this happened as a result. Doesn't do any harm, does it?
Not at all. You are fine, these guys. Because for a while, you were going off there with no blocks. Nobody standing in your way. And it was too good to be true. And it couldn't happen today. As these guys build up, you'll get stronger. It'll be more fascinating.
You know, one of the amazing things about the computer is that it's all now being set to do the old job. Even museums, you see, are merely storage systems. The real power of the computer is as a source of discovery. That is, when by interface you retrieve information at high speeds, you can, by banging various things against each other, reveal all sorts of structural facts about them that were completely hidden before. Now, this is true in language, which is a retrieval system also. When you recall things cockeyed, you usually make discoveries. That's when the pun or the slip of speech comes up to aid in discovery. And the slip of the tongue is usually a revealing moment.
People say to me, you lost a lot of weight. It must take a lot of willpower. I said, no, it takes willpower. I won't eat this. I won't eat that. I had willpower before. I will eat that. I will eat that. It takes willpower.
Marshall, can we have a visual church? Can we replace the pulpit with a screen and all the icons with TV sets?
Well, TV as a liturgical means is far more potent than actual presence in the church. In following the Mass, for example, most Catholics feel right off in their first encounter with it on TV that they had never really seen it before. It's much more participative than being in the church. It's like the church is very much like the concert hall, full of distractions, lateral, horizontal distractions of other people in crazy clothes and crazy voices and crazy everything. This creates a huge distraction that TV eliminates. Having what effect do you have in mind? Oh, you tend to be more isolated then. The dark theater.
We have a church in Greenwich Village where it's given over to artists. Jazz musicians play a mass that they created themselves.
Folk mass.
They just sit down and they do their movies in there that they think.
Have you spoken to
them? Uh-huh.
Have you spoken to this church?
No. Oh, well, William Glenesk's church. It's a Presbyterian one over in Brooklyn.
No, that's not it.
This is in the village.
No. I'm just wondering how, and if maybe in Canada this has been applied there.
Well, in backward countries you can do things that you can't do in more advanced countries because, literally, there's a bigger backlog, you see, of applied and conventional wisdom to overcome before you can do anything new. In areas where they haven't tried to do anything new ever, you don't have the same obstacles to overcome in innovation. It's like Ghana or somewhere like that. You can race ahead into the 20th century there far faster than you can in Brooklyn or New York. There's no backlog of technology.
You don't have to close down.
There's no technology to obstruct whatever.
All right, can I ask you a question about Ghana? Can we develop a system of closed-circuit justice since there is a shortage of lawyers and judges?
No, you have to face the fact you can't put the old judicial procedures on a new medium. You can't have a jury trial by jury on TV. The relation
closed circuit where the judge is.
The point is that the involvement of the people in each other is different from their involvement in this room. Their relation to one another changes.
So electronic.
They're in show business. They're in show business. The moment they go on to TV, they're in show business.
And aren't lawyers in show business continually?
Yeah. But There are some people in the court who are supposed not to be. The judge and the jury are not supposed to be in show business. On TV, they are. And they act accordingly. Changes their whole relation to the victim.
You're against cameras in the court of any kind.
No. I'm merely telling you what happens.
I'm probing.
It changes the whole nature of judicial procedure. It would not be the same in a few months. Everything would have been rearranged.
It changes the size of the show.
I'm sure.
Did you ever see the...
We have to get going.
Did you ever read the story, the situation where the defense attorney wanted to take away the attention of the jury while the prosecuting talking? He stuck a wire paper clip inside his cigar, just stood there smoking, and let the ash hang long. The whole jury was watching that ash. When did that fall?
You know, this happened in a PhD. This happened in a PhD oral. The student put a great big sort of knitting needle in his cigar and held the ash on from beginning to end of his oral, hypnotized his examiner. They were helpless.
Where are these guys
from?
Well, that's great stuff. Imagine a commercial
we
can do with this. Why
don't
you apply it to
a
commercial?
It's for
Groucho.
Come on.
Yeah, you're right.
See, I have a friend who should know about this. I should make this little note. It's Art in America, March... April. Art in America, March, April 66. Electronic Museum. Harley Parker is doing a book on museums, past, present, future, and with his eye on unused potential. Well, it's been fun, but let's see. Visual image with soundtrack.
Well, that I think I can.
Take
some things that I have both for.
And you can save yourself some bother.
Well, I have it all. That's right.
Thank you very much.
This show.
Is that the museum?
Can you stay?
Well, this is so fascinating. We haven't even scratched the surface.
That's true.
I hope one time we can get together with some of the pictures that we're involved in. Oh, Charlie Arnold's one of his teachers, I bet. Is he graduating this year?
He's one more year to go.
Send him down, will you?
Oh, right.
I bought my son, Hattersley. He used to be
Jack,
one of our best writers.
Dear sucker, Jack.
And, it's a hell of a field, boy. As you probably know from your involvement.
I'll be around until 5 o'clock and I'll be out from 5 to 7:30.
Maybe home
after 7:30. Okay.
Come on. Wait a minute.
Well, that just as radio was added to silent pictures as soundtrack, so TV has tended to retain the movie soundtrack, which is a radio form, in spite of the fact that the images for which the sound is provided have nothing in common. So I haven't tried to imagine myself what should be the soundtrack for TV.
moment you accept the...
The moment you accept the world as a recording studio, you have accepted the environment as an art form. This is only possible when you have another electronic environment of information that goes totally around the globe itself, enclosing the globe, as it were, in a net of electric information that turns the globe, the habitat, what had previously been the human environment, now becomes the content of an electric man-made environment. And we then suddenly become tremendously self-conscious of all sounds and effects of that environment as if it were a work of art. This is the moment of pop art. It's one thing to put a tomato can in the Guggenheim as a stunt, but as an artistic gesture, it is really a way of saying that the environment of man has now become an art form.
Okay.
We think of humor as a mark of sanity for a good reason. In fun and play, we recover the integral person who in the workaday world or in professional life...
No, is this? Oh, yes, I meant... All right, fine, excuse me, yes.
Or in professional life can use only a small sector of his being. When a person is... using all his faculties at once, he's playing, he's at leisure. The artist never works, although he is often intensely involved in his creative activity. He's always at leisure because he's using all his faculties. And in the same way, games, like hobbies, are popular art, collective, social reactions to the main drive or action in any culture. Games like institutions are extensions of social man and of the body politic, as technologies are extensions of the animal organism. Both games and technologies are counter-irritants, or ways of adjusting to the stress of specialized actions that occur in any social group. As extensions of the popular response to the workaday stress, games become faithful models of a culture. They incorporate both the action and the reaction of whole populations in a single dynamic image. It would be unthinkable, for example, to imagine ourselves paying attention to games from another culture, cricket, for example. In the same way, until you have an audience participating in the action of the game, there isn't any game. It's merely a dress rehearsal until there is an actual audience participant. In other words, games require audience as actors, not just as spectators. The wide appeal of games of recent times, the popular sports of baseball and football and ice hockey, seen as outer models of inner psychological life, become understandable. As models, they are collective rather than private dramatizations of inner life. You couldn't really have a game that was a merely private image or a private model of action. It does require this corporate response, and it does require this kind of involvement in the total life of a culture in order for it to be a game at all.
What does solitaire mean?
I suppose a little bit like golf, which means pursuing your own immediate problems and immediate moves. But it isn't a game I've ever played myself, but it is, by definition, it is an extreme form of game which excludes as much as possible of the corporate life. I suppose, however, it dramatizes the needs of the individual to adjust to a limited set of components, cards, plays. It is a way of harassed individuals confronting the rather limited conditions of their existence. If you see someone playing solitaire in a movie or on a stage, you know that there is a kind of stressful situation. It records, it reflects some sort of inner stress, almost to a degree of comedy. Art and games enable us to stand aside from the pressures of routine and convention, observing and questioning. Games as popular art forms offer to all an immediate means of participation in the full life of a society such as no single role or job can offer to any man. You know, we have phrases like the newspaper game, and the newspaper as game, or the business game, is a way of exploring the environment, of finding out what it's made of, testing it, trying it on, putting it on. In fact, I suppose one could say that games are really a way of putting on one's fellow man. Rocket Richard, the famous Canadian hockey player, used to complain about the acoustics of the Maple Leaf Stadium in Toronto, explaining that it interfered altogether with his game as compared with the Forum, Montreal. He felt that the puck off his stick rode on the roar of the crowd when he was in a good acoustic situation. And this is, I suppose, an extreme example of the way in which audience participation makes a game possible. Sport as a popular form is not just self-expression, but is deeply and necessarily a means of interplay within an entire culture. Seen as live models of complex social situations, games may lack moral earnestness. Perhaps there is desperate need for games in a highly specialized industrial culture, since they are the only form of art accessible to many minds. Real interplay is reduced to nothing in a specialist world of delegated tasks and fragmented skills and jobs. Games create countervailing force. They prevent us from bogging down into too grim earnest. Men without art and men without popular arts of games tend toward the anthill, the world of automatism. Art, like games, is a translator of experience, a way of probing the life around us. What we have already felt or seen in one situation, we are suddenly given in a new kind of material in the form of games. Games likewise shift familiar experience into new forms, giving the bleak and the blear side of things sudden luminosity. To flip back a moment to the newspaper game, it has often been noticed and often caused a certain amount of puzzlement why real news has to be bad news. Good news just wouldn't do to keep a newspaper alive. After all, advertising is all good news. And real news, on the other hand, has to have a catastrophic dimension. I think perhaps the reason for this is that in the catastrophe or in the disaster, in the bad news, you have the encounter of different kinds of forms. You have the revelation of forms, the life of forms, by contrast and encounter. In other words, the exploratory, the discovery aspect of art and game comes alive in this encounter of situations which we associate with bad news and disasters. Games then are contrived and controlled situations, extensions of group awareness that permit a respite from customary patterns. They're a kind of talking to itself on the part of a society as a whole. Talking to oneself is a recognized form of play that is indispensable to any growth of self-confidence. The British and Americans have enjoyed during recent times an enormous self-confidence born of the playful spirit of fun and games. When they sense the absence of this spirit in their rivals, it causes embarrassment. To take mere worldly things in dead earnest betokens a defective awareness that is pitiable. that games are extensions not of our private, but of our social selves, and that they are media of communication should now be plain. If finally we ask, are games mass media? The answer has to be yes. And games are situations contrived to permit simultaneous participation of many people in some significant pattern of their own corporate lives, patterns that may remain distant and inaccessible to most people except as they encounter them in games. This can be related also to that phrase that I came up with a while back. That the medium is the massage. This should appear especially obvious in matter of games. The massage or the rough handling of people by people and the banging of one situation into another situation is deliberately contrived, is deliberately explained, as it were, in our social mass communication form of games. The medium is the massage refers to the fact that any new medium creates an environment which really deals rather roughly with old environments and with people in the old environments. And games are subject to a good many vicissitudes and changes. As baseball has tended to fade with TV, so has boxing. Boxing is altogether too abrupt, too violent, too sudden, too harsh, an encounter, a massage, for this medium, as compared with, for example, with All in Wrestling, where the massage is altogether more congenial to the medium of TV. In fact, All in Wrestling is mainly a product of TV and is showmanship and showbiz all the way. Boxing, by comparison, is too harsh, too hot, too sudden. Have not the New York police issued instructions in recent years to the population that if individually they should be in trouble, they should not ask for help. They should shout, fire. This is a very extraordinary suggestion, which may have helped to explain the difference between a hot game like boxing and a cool game like wrestling. The involvement in wrestling is much greater than in boxing. In boxing, the performers are much more detached. And they're, in fact, they're told to break clean in the clinches. They're invited to stay as separate as possible. Whereas in wrestling, they're expected to be as involved as possible. Wrestling has come back big with TV. Boxing has declined drastically with TV. People don't respond to cries for help because they already feel involved. They don't want to get involved one little bit more than they already are in their private lives. On the other hand, fire is like boxing. It suggests merely, let's rush in and put out this fire and then beat it. It doesn't suggest involvement, but merely in a sudden, swift encounter. But cries for help are terrifying because they suggest that we're going to get even further involved in some situation of which we have no idea. And so the mystery, I think, about why people have tended to stand by and watch innocent people get clobbered in our world since TV may be understandable in these terms.
Okay. In fun and play, we are, you know.
We think of humor as a mark of sanity for a good reason. In fun and play, we recover the integral person, who in the workaday world or in professional life can use only a small sector of his being. Classing in sport
Start that again.
The mere idea of a magazine specializing in sport is rather startling. When you think of it, it does suggest that the world of games has been upgraded greatly in our new electric world, and that the participation in games is taking on new forms. As, for example, in baseball, on TV, it's plain that the viewer participates far more in the mysteries, the processes of baseball, the signals used, the strategies used between batters, catchers, pitchers, and base coaches and such. Also, with the coming of instant playback, you have a tremendous means of involvement in the process of games, which is very congenial to the TV viewer. The world of process and the art and mystery of games as a complex process is something that TV has fostered and would seem to account for the popularity of a thing like Sports Illustrated, which offers unlimited expression for this very matter of artistic interest in the game as a process.
I think the whole statement on that is
one of the paradoxical reversals of democracy under conditions of electric technology brings the individual member of society to exactly the same condition formerly confronting royalty in older societies. The work of royalty was, and to a large degree is, not the preparing for any particular job in life, but simply growing up. Growing up meaning the use of all faculties, learning all things, and under electric conditions, this has become increasingly the destiny of ordinary individuals. They have to simply know everything that's going on in their world. They have to grow up, using all their faculties at once. Instead of specializing, using just a few of their faculties to acquire a particular skill, they have to use all their faculties and simply to know and to grow. This is therefore a far harder work than the old idea of job preparation, but far more exciting because far more satisfying to an integral being. The population of the world can be comfortably fed and housed in West Germany or Montana.
What was that?
The entire population can be comfortably fed and housed, lots of space, in West Germany or in Montana. Now, with the new means of new resources, scientific resources for getting yield out of things, therefore what we call crowding and population explosion and so on is mainly a result of trying to fit a new situation inside an old situation. It's again this media clash. So again, population explosion has not got very much to do with the increasing number of people. It has very much to do with the fact that at high speeds of information, there's no space between people anymore. All space has been removed between people. They're suddenly crammed together like a black hole of Calcutta. This having very little to do with numbers, very much to do with speed. And same with the mass media. Mass media are not constituted by their size, but by the speed with which they operate and the degree to which they involve their audiences. The mass is a function of speed.
Mass means all at once.
No, it means all at once. And you know anything that moves at the speed of a light is supposed to, by, in terms of modern physics, to acquire infinite mass.
Also, if you take the definition or the thought I have when you say mass, I think of a body of something.
Yeah.
So this is a body of opinion all at once, a body of reaction all at once.
But if a small particle could acquire infinite mass at speed of light, this helps to explain many of our problems in the modern world. Trivial news events can acquire huge and portentous proportions at electric speeds. And we are compelled to participate in the wars around the world simply because of speed of information movement.
You said at one point elections were obsolete in that NBC show. Can you expand on that at all?
Well, nose counting, fragmentation of opinion, nose counting, goes very much along with typographic technology. Typographic technology creates a public made up of discrete, separate individuals, each with a point of view. At electric speeds, people become so tightly involved in each other and that they lose all point of view, become simply creatures of a mood or a particular state of mind. It's like switching from the world of, say, separate pictures, cartoons, into a world of simple block color, which is a world of profound involvement and single mood.
Well, would you in any way say that elections might take the form of these NBC or CBS, what do they call that program on where they have these testing or opinion people send in? They've been
having national safety.
No, they have
today?
No, they have a virus playback. They call it
playback.
Playback.
I haven't seen these.
Yeah,
I'd be interested.
And it's where they send out questions, three or four questions, on computer cards. They get back their answers from all over the country.
Well, I suggest that instead of sending out questions, that they first brief audiences on top problems, and then invite not their response by way of yes, no, or maybe, but solutions, practical solutions to cancer research, to any kind of scientific problem, whatever. But the nose counting is based on fragmentation, only became possible with newspapers and typography. Under electric conditions, nose counting becomes meaningless.
Do you have any relation of this to research and advertising? I find that it is a destructive force, that they measure what people remember about something, but that has nothing to do with what they feel about something.
No.
I think what they feel about a product is more important than what they remember.
I'm not suggesting for one moment that any of these developments are necessarily good. They obviously fraught, as they used to say, with terrible possibilities in the way of destruction and annihilation. Naturally, as we acquire new powers and much greater powers, we also acquire more threatening means of dealing with ourselves and others. It's like the inner world of judging people. You can really do people in but good in your heart by judging them this way or that way. We're increasingly acquiring this power as an outer fact. We can deal with ourselves and with our world almost in the same instant and total way that we can deal with our inner mental life and movements of judgment. It's about this moment that people suddenly panic at the thought of capital punishment. As they become more involved in each other, they become terrified at the idea of capital punishment because they no longer feel capable of assigning discrete, separate, little bits of blame to anybody anymore. They feel that I'm just as guilty of this about this situation as those people who are being punished for it. And this creates terrible confusion. As we become more involved and more feel more involved in these events, we lose the ability to make decisions, and in the sciences, in fact, the uncertainty principle has come into play in physics as the physicist becomes more aware of the structure and behavior of particles. He is more and more aware about the uncertainty of their behavior and about the means by which it can be influenced by the scientist himself. And so, in a paradox, the electric world is, as the environment itself becomes one of information, we become less and less certain about what to do with it. We're moving steadily in the direction. Well, so once you've externalized your nervous system, you're certainly beginning to move in the direction of externalizing the activity of consciousness. Consciousness isn't a content, it's an activity, it's a process. In fun and play, we recover the integral person who in the workaday world can use only a small sector of his being. Perhaps there is a desperate need for games in a highly specialized industrial culture, since they are the only form of art accessible to many minds. Real interplay is reduced to nothing in a specialist world of delegated tasks and fragmented skills and jobs. Games create countervailing force. They prevent us from bogging down into too grim earnest. Men without popular arts of games tend toward the anthill, the world of automatism. Games shift familiar experience into new forms, giving the bleak and the blear side of things sudden luminosity. Games enable us to stand aside from the pressures of routine and convention, observing and questioning. Games offer to all an immediate means of participation in the full life of a society, such as no job can offer to any man. Games are situations contrived to permit simultaneous participation of many people in some significant pattern of their own corporate lives, patterns that may remain distant and inaccessible to most people except as they encounter them in games. Games are a kind of talking to itself on the part of a society as a whole. Talking to oneself is a recognized form of play that is indispensable to any growth of self-confidence. Americans have enjoyed during recent times an enormous self-confidence born of the playful spirit of fun and games. When they sense the absence of this spirit in their rivals, it causes embarrassment. To take mere worldly things in dead earnest betokens a defective awareness that is pitiable. We think of humor as a mark of sanity for a good reason. In play, we recover the integral person, who in the workaday world or in professional life can use only a small sector of his being. The mere idea of a magazine specializing in sport is rather startling when you think of it. It does suggest that the world of games has been upgraded greatly in our new electric world. The participation in games is taking on new forms, as, for example, in baseball, on TV, it's plain that the a viewer participates far more in the mysteries, the processes of baseball, the signals used, the strategies used between pitchers and catchers, batters and base coaches. With the coming of instant playback, you have a tremendous means of involvement in the process of games. The world of process is something that would seem to account for the popularity of Sports Illustrated, which offers unlimited expression for this very matter of artistic interest in the game as a process. Rocket Richard, the famous Canadian hockey player, used to complain about the acoustics of the Maple Leaf Stadium in Toronto, explaining that it interfered altogether with his game as compared with the Forum, Montreal. He felt that the puck off his stick rode on the roar of the crowd when he was in a good acoustic situation. And this is, I suppose, an extreme example of the way in which audience participation makes a game possible. Sport as a popular form is not just self-expression, but is deeply and necessarily a means of interplay within an entire culture. Games are extensions of social man, as technologies are extensions of the animal organism. Games are ways of adjusting to the stress of specialized actions that occur in any social group. Electric technology brings the individual member of society to exactly the same condition formerly confronting royalty. The work of royalty was not preparing for any particular job in life, but simply growing up. Growing up meaning the use of all faculties, learning all things, and under electric conditions, this has become increasingly the destiny of ordinary individuals. Instead of specializing, using just a few of their faculties to acquire a particular skill, they have to use all their faculties and simply to know and to grow. This is therefore a far harder work than the old idea of job preparation, but far more exciting because far more satisfying to an integral being.